But it's an exercise. It's essentially a training exercise where you let everybody go through the experience of a failure. And it could be a system failure, you know, a key machine that's stamping out widgets suddenly shuts down or freezes up. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? The other thing is, what are the ramifications? Let's talk about the downstream consequences. Mm-hmm. And you start getting people to think as problem solvers instead of victims of a changed reality. And also you're showing them that you see them as problem solvers. They're part of the team. They're part of the solution design group.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today's guest is Marty Strong. He's the author of the book, Be Visionary. It comes out on January 2nd. It's available for pre-order right now. We're going to talk a little bit about the concepts inside of here and give you three little snippets that would hopefully be valuable to you. I tell you, the conversation was valuable to me today. So listen and have an open mind as you start down this path of this podcast today. Also, before we jump into the conversation with Marty, I do want to invite you, maybe even beg and plead, or just offer you a free invitation to subscribe if you haven't already. It's available on YouTube, it's on Facebook in a video format, and it's on all of the podcast platforms in audio only, and it is free for your consumption. Also, if somebody that you know might be interested in this concept as a growing leader, is a leader of an organization, or a leader in an organization, and maybe would take some advice from this, maybe share this episode with them. I think they'll get value and impact out of it. Very straightforward tactical advice from Marty through the conversation today. But if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. We have a brand new episode every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., and we want you to make sure that you're a part of every single one of them. Now, grab a cup of coffee. I've got mine here. It's pretty tasty. And let's get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
Marty, thanks for being here again for a return podcast guest. We've got some exciting things to talk about. We're going to be chatting about wherever this is. Yeah, about your latest book. You've written several books, haven't you?
Two business books. That's the second business book. And then nine novels.
All right. Well, just nine novels. Small undertaking. But anyways, we're going to be talking about this, a few excerpts of this book today. I've read through it a little bit, and some practical things in here that I think really anybody in business would be beneficial to pick up. And I mean, it's a quick read too. It's 190 some pages, right? So it's something that you can get, digest, practical application. But as always, before we do that, it's rapid fire, five randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point values. And then we'll give you a score at the end. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Question number one, what is the next skill that you would like to learn really well?
I play guitar.
Okay. Have you played, you play other instruments?
No.
just going to dive in.
I learned a little bit of the guitar about 15, 16 years ago and got to a point where I could do chords, and then I stopped practicing, and then that was the end of that.
Very cool. I took piano lessons when I was but a lad, and I know where middle C is, and I can play a couple of chords, and that stuck with me for quite a while. But guitar, I've tried it several times, and the concept just doesn't make sense to me. So,
yeah, I can do a master class in air guitar, but I can't actually play the real guitar.
Well, now if we're talking Guitar Hero, that's a whole different conversation. But anyways, okay. Question number two: what do you like best about yourself?
My sense of humor.
Yeah. Okay. What? Give us an example of your sense of humor.
I don't know if I started with it or it evolved over a lifelong of silly mistakes and eventually not taking myself too seriously. But I think it helps inoculate me against a lot of stress. And apparently it also makes other people less stressful. You know, I'm a CEO, so if they see me kind of smiling when things are going a little sideways, they seem to think that's a good thing. That's, no. You know,
Well, that's fair. That is a fair, fair example. Okay. Question number three, what part of history do you find most interesting?
Probably the last 300 years of the Roman Empire, when it was falling apart and shattering and creating all kinds of other little, you know, just before the Dark Ages, essentially.
All right. Question number four, what's something that you would be willing to stay up all night for?
I would be willing to stay up all night if they could find something of value at the bottom of the money pit on the show The Curse of Oak Island. I would stay up for that.
That is very detailed.
That would be like my Al Capone's vault, which I also stayed up for. Yeah, that would be it. I would stay up all night for that.
So I don't know whatever you just said, but that is, I'm guessing, a show of some sort, and that's the resolution.
Yes, there's a money pit that people have been digging in for about 150 years, and supposedly Templar Knights buried the Ark of the Covenant down. There are all kinds of different things, and the show's been going on this is the 10th season, and they still haven't found any. They found all kinds of interesting stuff, but they haven't found, like, gold, silver. So yeah, I'd stay up all night to see that actually happen.
Such a great example, and I like very specific that it rolled right off of your tongue. That's incredible. Final question number five, what have you recently felt grateful for?
My health.
Really?
I'm in good shape, you know, fitness wise, but I just finished a bout with COVID, my only bout with COVID after dodging it for almost 3 years. And, 8 or 9 days of being tired and fatigued and all that stuff. And then coming out of it, you realize how much you take that for granted.
Yeah. It feels like a bit of an exclusive club, those that have been able to avoid it this entire time.
Yeah. I'm no longer in that exclusive club.
Yeah. Sad to see you go, Marty. All right. Congratulations. You passed rapid fire. We'll give you a score of 762.
All right. Maximum score is what, like 10,000?
I don't even know what the max. I guess the maximum score is infinity, but I don't really even know how you would put that. Anyways, okay. Let's jump into the conversation about the book Be Visionary, Strategic Leadership in the Age of Optimism, or optimization, because I can't read. Also, thanks for the signature on here. I will hopefully that'll be worth some money one day. But thank you for sending this over. So I was kind of scrubbing through this, and I want to kind of throw some questions at you for clarification. Maybe we can kind of dive down some different paths and hopefully bring some value to our audience when it comes to leadership as a whole. Because there's challenges all the time when you're trying to navigate, and especially right now, we've been through a lot of unprecedented times, and it sounds like we're heading in that direction as well. So it's definitely important to understand some aspects of that. So here we go. I want to jump into chapter six, the three levels of management. This would have been a good quiz question. What is chapter six? If you could have just rolled that off your tongue.
That would have been, but it's too late. The quiz is over.
I'll save that one for the next one. Hopefully you don't have one in front of you. The three levels of management. Explain the concept of the three levels of management to us.
So the military breaks up warfare into three levels. The strategic level, which is the bigger picture, the longer term ramifications or consequences of actions, which includes both your reaction to somebody else as a threat or trying to be an aggressor against you, or if you have a plan that you want to push forward and you want to seize some kind of a strategic objective, strategic advantage. And there's a whole realm of planning and leadership very specific to that bigger picture approach. And then the middle layer is called operational. So the operational level is, in the military, it's campaign planning. It's building a series of campaigns, could be multiple campaigns that all together in kind of concert hopefully we'll end up with achieving your strategic objective. And then the operational campaigns, the details of those operational campaigns are your tactics and your technical level of capability. So you know, the abilities of your weapon systems, the abilities of your individual units, your special units, your conventional units, and how they all execute at the very lowest level of performance. So when you take that kind of a definition of those three levels and you apply it to business, I found that you end up with a way of measuring how much time leaders spend on any one of those three kind of areas of focus. And I was always kind of astounded that when I talk to leaders, even C-level leaders, they have a very, very intimate understanding and knowledge of the day-to-day, blow-by-blow at the tactical level. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of measuring. There's a lot of collection of data. There's a lot of dashboard reflection of that data. The communications recording communications and feedback loop is pretty good. And if the C-level leaders actually work their way up through an industry or even through one big corporation, that's where they started. So they've already got that under their belt. They understand it viscerally. Mm-hmm. Then I start to see a little bit of weakness at the operational level of planning, partially because to have an operational plan and have it be coherent, you have to have a strategy. Mm-hmm. Because it's supposed to be aiming in some direction for some reason. You don't just have an operational plan to just keep doing what you're doing just because you've been doing it. So I'll give you an example. If your strategy is to penetrate into the European market with your goods and services, and you know about when you'd like to have a footprint, and you know when you'd like that beachhead or that footprint to expand and at what rate of expansion over what time, then you say, okay, so that's where we want to go. And that's when we want to be there. And that's what we want to look like. So then you start back planning, how do we get there? And that's what informs and kind of affects the construct of the operational management piece. But if you don't have a strategic idea of where you're going at all, if you have, you're just kind of reacting to the environment or just trying to grow, quote unquote, at some flat percentage rate or whatever, then your operational plan is kind of floating in between an unknown future and a really well-known past, because the past is all your technical, all your technical history, right? And so what I read about in the book, because essentially the book's talking about shifting emphasis and focus away from what you're already overdoing, which is looking at the past, the rearview mirror kind of leadership, and start with the strategic, the outlook, the vision, the horizontal assessment, and then come back and then create your operational plans. And what you'll find is maybe some of your operational planning flies in the face of what you've been doing technically and tactically. There's a disconnect there. Mm-hmm. So if you can't go into Europe with a certain kind of distribution system, but you have a distribution system that works great in the United States, part of your operational plan is you have to create a European friendly distribution system. You can't just say, well, we've got what we've got in the United States. We'll just assume we're going to do that. So that's kind of what the three breakouts are, why I broke them out and emphasized them in the book. And again, why I spent time with writing a book that focuses more on the value and importance of strategic thinking.
Fight back against the spread of germs with specialty designed door hardware. From arm hooks and crash bars to wave to open. At LockDock Security, we have the right fit for any situation. Arm hooks can be retrofitted to doors with existing pull handles. Adding crash bars can reduce even more touch points while retaining ease of exit. And for those looking to remove touch points altogether, we offer wave to open solutions enabling you to command the door from afar. Reduce touch points and live healthier with LockDock Security.
From a technical standpoint, a lot of people understand that and they live that, especially when you're talking, you know, small business world, founder, whatever, that's kind of navigated that. They're very understanding of it. I'm intrigued by, do you see people have that functional thing going on and then jump to the strategic, but there's a gap in the operational? Or is it more of, are you seeing the technical side moving into operational and just kind of getting stuck there?
I see more people that understand the technical, tactical level. If they think they think strategy is just grow mm-hmm. bigger, double size, whatever, they try to supersize the technical, tactical side, and that becomes their operational plan. It's just, if we've got five of them, let's get 10 of them. If we've got 100 pounds of this, let's put 200 pounds into the machine. And it's more of just a mathematic equation of how do we double or triple the output based on doubling and tripling the input. So if you're making widgets, it's raw material input. If you're providing services. It's whatever's the driving cost and raw materials of your services that you're delivering. That really isn't the same thing as a strategy. That isn't really the same thing as a cardinal direction, long-term direction for a company. So the problem, and this is where they solve this in the military, the problem in the commercial world is they don't spend time grooming leaders and moving them up through kind of like an academy level. I mean, obviously, Jack Welch talked about the GE Academy. It was the point of the GE Academy because he saw it was missing. How do you evolve a low-level manager to a middle-level manager to a senior manager to a director to a divisional VP? You see what I mean? And because at each level, they should have a different focus, and they should start looking less and less at the tips of their toes and more out at the end of the parking lot, and then eventually, you know, across the ocean to the other side of the pond. So, what the military does is it has a grooming process, and you go through different war colleges and you go through different kinds of training so that you don't fall behind, and you learn that your new job now is to let somebody else think about tactical and you think about operational. And then eventually, when you get senior enough, your new job is to stop thinking about operational and start thinking about strategic, you know, the bigger objectives. And that's pretty much completely missing in most of the companies I either study, I've read about, or the companies I interact with. It's an overfocus on optimization, because optimization has kind of taken the place of strategy and vision as a directional metric or a directional feedback, process. How are we doing? How are we going to do next week? How are we doing? How are we going to do next week? And that's pretty much where it stops.
See, the old mantra, what got you here won't get you there. And I think the way you said it was, you've got a process, you've got the thing that's working, and the concept, if you get stuck too much in the technical and the operational, is just multiplying that in a mindset exceeds or continues growth without getting out of that mindset and getting into long-term strategy. You're going to hit a point of limitation or frustration, I'm guessing, through that cycle.
Right. So if you're in manufacturing or production and you're making a product and your competitors are coming up with a different way to make it or a better way to make it or a completely different product with more bells and whistles than your product has, doubling down on what you're doing is not the right way to go. You need to actually change what you're doing. That's different.
Yeah.
And same thing if, you know, the model of the business. If in the environment, whether it's the pandemic, a pandemic-induced change in the business model, or whether it's a recession-driven change in your business model, if you just stick with the same business model, let's say you've got lots of brick and mortar and lots of full-time employees, et cetera, but your sales are going down and your margins are shrinking because now you have to start cutting prices to get your sales back up. Mm-hmm. What you don't realize is that you're competing against companies that gigged out 3 years ago, and you're competing against people that aren't paying full-time benefits. And if you're in the research and development, or if you're in the design, art, advertising, creatives world, they're tapping into the best of breed through freelance access, where you've got who you hire, period, the end. So that's a change. And if you're not aware it's happening, you can't just double down on what you're doing, because it's what you'll end up finding out is, as a lagging indicator, you're going to realize everybody's kicking your butt. And that's the reason they're kicking your butt. But they started kicking your butt 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So you're way behind the change curve. So you have to think about leapfrogging and bouncing ahead of what's going on. At a minimum, try to bounce ahead to keep up with what the world's doing to you. It's never going to stay static.
On that note, jumping ahead to chapter 13, the aspirational, making the aspirational actionable. You've got a section here on refining as you go. And you kind of start breaking down an understanding of, you use a lot of examples with the SEAL team, understanding that you've got to adapt in a situation, and as you put out that strategy, understanding at what points you've got to make adjustments. Walk us through that, because I think you just kind of led into it with understanding what else is going on in the market, what else is impacting that long-term strategy, not just doubling down, but having to make real adjustments.
So there's two ways to pursue a strategy. There's kind of a whole cloth you know, shut everything down and build everything from scratch for the new way you want to do business, and then turn on the lights whenever you're ready to go. The other one is to kind of segue or transition into it. So you might go through your current status. You have a midpoint hybrid kind of approach. That might be in a year. You transition to the hybrid approach, and then you start transitioning away from the hybrid approach to whatever it is that you want to be as an end state, which means that if you both of those make the, you know, aspirational strategic vision achievable, the first one's pretty draconian, just to shut everything down and you know, just wait, like, we're going to replace all the rides in Wally World, and it's going to take us 9 months. So we're shutting Wally World down for 9 months. You know?
Shut the whole thing down. Yep.
Right. And then when we turn it back on again, it's going to be a better place. Not too many businesses are capable of doing that. So the second way of doing it, the kind of transitional segue, still allows you through incremental steps to pursue a dynamic change in the way you're doing business. Unfortunately, the first one is too scary. It would work, and it's too expensive, and so nobody does it. The second, unless it's shut down and somebody else buys it, right, in bankruptcy or something, they reinvent it, and now it's back up, and now it's a whole new thing. And the second one, some people believe it's just going to take too long. They don't believe it's ever going to get there, so they just decide not to do it. They decide not to pursue those baby steps. They want a bigger, more dramatic. This is sometimes investors on the outside, sometimes the C-level people would like to see they're sold on the new idea, the new vision, and they want to get there real quick. Mm-hmm. But it's very disruptive, and it's very destructive, unless you have all the money in the world you can throw at this thing, to try to just make a huge leap of faith as a business. So what I try to do in the book is I try to show that incrementalism and that kind of operational plan that you put together to pursue the visionary strategy that you've got approved and you've got resourced, that it's going to take time. And over time, you're going to start finding things that didn't align perfectly. The assumptions that you started with may tweak a little bit. It doesn't mean you throw the entire strategy out the window. It just means you start adjusting and you keep modifying, kind of trimming the sails on your operational plan. Mm-hmm. It may be how much you're spending. It may be the way you're spending, the pace of spending. It may be that, say, in the example of going into Europe, you thought you were going to go into France and you're running into resistance as far as regulatory resistance, but you can go into Belgium or you can go into Denmark with zero friction. And so you have to change the plan. We're going to go into Denmark and Belgium first instead of going into France first.
Yeah.
It's a slight adjustment, but you have to be open and flexible, you know, to those possibilities, and then, but keep on track to the end goal.
It's interesting advice, or good advice, I want to say, because I think you said it well. And so I want to repeat what I just heard you say, maybe for my own understanding or my own appeasement. But when you have a strategy that you're trying to work towards and you've got a end goal that you're trying to accomplish, when you're doing that and planning for that, there are a lot of, and I think you said assumptions when you were talking about it, but maybe some things that at that point you know to be true, or they could be assumptions or information or facts at that particular time. As time moves forward, as that strategy starts to unroll, things may change. Maybe the market changes. Maybe the climate changes. Maybe, you know, you, like you're saying, you know, I'm trying to localize it here instead of European markets, because that's a stretch for us. But, another state, rather, we have a target to move into this area and this area. Well, if the second area opens up first, or that opportunity opens up first, having the ability to migrate there and not be so structured in your plan that you missed that opportunity because you have not followed that exact plan that you assumed would be the case at that moment. Is that what I just heard you say?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And the reason I use some examples from the SEAL teams is SEALs and the leaders in the SEAL teams are all taught to be flexible, because the assumptions, the underlying intelligence assumptions, et cetera, that you base your plan on are almost always faulty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not necessarily quicksand, but sometimes you'll get there and 50% of what you relied on to make your decisions and your pre-planning have completely changed. So it can be as dramatic as the actual target is not there or a different target's there.
Yeah.
It might be a better target, but you're not, you know, authorized to do anything about it. So you have to figure out, can I get permission? Do I have the people to do what I need to do on this particular opportunity? It could be that, you know, you plan on going in one way, but you get there and there's a bunch of people blocking your way. Now you have to come up with a whole different way to get in there. That is so normal in special operations, both mission planning and execution, that is baked in all the way back to the beginning of the selection process for everybody. Anybody that's in a commando unit around the world, that's part of the uncertainty factor that's baked into the selection process so that you find people that have that psychological resilience and that flexibility and that creativity to be able to roll with the new assumptions, to roll with the new data, but they're still on the clock and they still have to get something done, right? So yeah, it's applicable to business too.
Managing your facility, properties, and projects is hard enough. Trying to find an emailed quote in your overflowing inbox is just one more annoyance, especially if there are multiple versions. We're working hard to make your life easier by providing all the information you need in one place. Now you can request service at a date and time that works for you. And we're making it easier to see quotes and materials needed for specific openings, including photos, so that you can approve everything from the convenience of your phone or computer. Log in to start using it now. Visit customer.lockdoc.net.
So, okay, I want to dig in on this, if you'll allow me. On that note, so you just said baked into the process, it's maybe there's at the beginning you're laying out a strategy and say, hey, this is our plan. Also, here's kind of optional choices that we may have to make down the line. But also there's maybe some optional choices that we don't know yet because they haven't made themselves apparent. But you just also said it's part of the selection team with the people that are involved that they can roll with the punches. So that's the SEAL application, bringing that down into, you know, Bob and Joe's business, Bob and Joe's bakery. We've planned that we're going to do this and things have changed and not everybody in the organization, not everybody in that business is as adaptable. What are some tips that you would give a business owner or a leader in that situation when maybe there wasn't the foresight to share those potential changes at the beginning, or maybe they were, but they just are still not part of the process. What is the thing that business owner needs to be aware of as they're navigating the adjustment?
Great question. And my answer is to basically do the same thing that they do in the SEAL teams, and it's called scenario-based training. It's experiential training. So you can do it sitting around a coffee table. You can do it before the shop opens up in the morning. You can do it, you know, you can carve a lot of time aside if you want to, but you don't really need that. Just sitting around, it's like contingency planning, contingency thinking. You pull the team together and you say, okay, what happens today if our shipment of food doesn't show up? What are we going to do? Anybody have any ideas? And you start getting people to think as problem solvers instead of victims of a changed reality. And also you're showing them that you see them as problem solvers. They're part of the team. They're part of the solution design group. And the more you do things like that, you know, the truck doesn't show up, the power goes out, you know, and somebody comes up, well, we're going to have to change the menu because we're not going to have the raw materials. Okay, but we don't have a way to print a new menu. Well, we could. I could write it down and we could run it off, you know, a copy of it, and we could hand draw, you know, handwrite a menu, or we could go down the street to Kinko's and have one made up real quick based on what we can make. I could do that. You know, you see what I mean? So it's a scenario related to your business. Mm-hmm. It could be a supply chain disruption. It could be the transportation to get to an important meeting is shut down for some reason. There's a lot of different things you can use. But it's an exercise. It's essentially a training exercise where you let everybody go through the experience of a failure. And it could be a system failure, you know, a key machine that's stamping out widgets suddenly shuts down or freezes up. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? The other thing is, what are the ramifications? Let's talk about the downstream consequences. Mm-hmm. And then you start getting into like customer communications. We got to tell somebody they're not going to get their order. We have to tell somebody, you know, and everybody starts thinking more like, like problem solvers and actually kind of like business owners and business leaders. And then you get that kind of group mind approach to inputs on how to fix things and how to make things better. The other thing that happens from that is people start seeing a utility for certain kinds of tools and workarounds that are on standby all the time in case of a contingency. It's kind of like a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk about having a fire enough and somebody goes, well, maybe we should have a fire extinguisher. Okay, let's get a fire extinguisher. And then it's sitting there all the time just in case. So you can actually create processes and workarounds, tools. You can have a couple of extra bodies that, you know, a couple of independent contractor types that you know would run in, you know, maybe a trucker that, two or three truckers you have on speed dial would come in and immediately pick up the slack because your truck broke down. Mm-hmm. You could have all those things because you talked about it. And as you were going through and doing it as an abstract training exercise, you're coming up with actually great ideas to put in place just in case.
Mm-hmm. All right. Final thought here on one last thing on the book that I want to get some thoughts on from you. Section on channeling emotional energy. You start talking a little bit about understanding that side of things. I think it's the chapter here at the near the end. I'm trying to find the chapter. Chapter 14, Failure, Disappointment, and Resets. Channeling emotional energy. Why? What does that mean, first of all? What does that mean for a leader?
If you're not building things a lot, you're not running into a failure to complete what you're trying to build a lot. So you probably aren't building up a lot of psychological scar tissue and preparedness for the next time that you fail. But if you're trying things and you're testing things, or you're in a very competitive environment, which will force you to try things and test things to either cope and survive or even to try to, you know, achieve a higher level of success, you are going to make mistakes and you are going to have plans that fall completely apart, and you are going to come up with a great strategy in a room, come up with a great operational plan for it, get everybody on board. And a week later, you found out that you really didn't look deep enough and you're leapfrogging into something that has already been decided by your competitors 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not a leapfrog forward. You're actually just copying somebody else's thought process. So now what do you do? You know, you have to stop. You have to think, all right, if they're already there and that's where we thought we were going, but they're already there, we need to redo this whole exercise and think bigger and think further out. Mm-hmm. And to do that as a human being and as a person leading other human beings that are engaged in this, it requires a lot of maturity and a lot of emotional IQ. I mean, you have to be able to, obviously, as a leader, you want to channel your emotional response to things. You don't want to scream and cry and crawl in the corner in a fetal position in the middle of the office space every time you get bad news. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of part and parcel with being a leader. And yet the other part of it is the kind of the flip side of that negative dramatic reaction. Good leaders absorb the hit, take a deep breath, and start thinking about, what's the next thing I need to do to get this thing back on track? Mm-hmm. They think they immediately shift from a negative piece of information and the initial emotional reaction to that, because they're human, mm-hmm. to a positive attack kind of lean forward approach to solving the problem. And then they have to have that same conviction, that same approach to communicating to everybody else what just happened. And then immediately get everybody to roll their sleeves up physically or psychologically, mm-hmm. to start problem solving instead of sitting there and dwelling on the event. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be an actual event, or it could be that you actually have been working really hard, like in the context of Be Visionary, and you're, you know, sometimes people take too long on these, you know, these projects. So let's say you gave yourself a year to build this operational plan to shift, and you get towards the end of the year, you're at 10 months, and all of a sudden the market falls out on you, or somebody else comes out with a whole new way of doing business, which makes your entire strategy and the plan that's supporting it useless. Mm-hmm. Again, what are you going to do? What kind of reaction is appropriate for a leader and for an organization? Do you just, you know, sit down and start drinking, or do you take a deep breath and say, okay, it's not the process we followed. Maybe we took too long. Mm-hmm. Maybe we analyzed too much. Maybe we dragged our feet too much. Maybe we didn't look far enough out. Our strategy was only 12 months out. It wasn't really 36 months out. So these are all things that you have to be able to do to be able to cope with failing, you know, in a small way, failing in a big way. And also when the whole plan starts to fall apart so that you can get back up on your feet and start all over again.
Great words of advice, Marty. I appreciate the time today. I really needed this conversation, so I hope it was impactful to some folks that may be listening or watching to it. Fantastic information, great insights here in this book. If somebody is listening to this and they say, hey, how can I get a copy of it besides Marty just signing it and sending it to me, starting a podcast and then having that happen, what is the best way for them to get a copy of this book?
So Be Visionary is available on Amazon right now for pre-sale. Comes out January 1st. And all my books are available on MartyStrongBeNimble.com, including Be Visionary.
Well, Marty, thanks again for the conversation today. As always, majorly impactful. Here is the book. It's Be Visionary. It's available at the 1st of January, January 2nd, I believe you said. It'll be available there on Amazon, but pre-orders are available right now if you're listening to this before January 2nd. If not, it's available now. So go ahead and order it. Link in the description below wherever you're listening or watching to this. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast. We do have a brand new episode out every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. So make sure you're subscribed on wherever you're hearing or seeing this. If it's Facebook, if it's on YouTube, or whatever podcast platform, hit the subscribe button. It'll make sure that you get notifications as soon as the next episode is released. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time right here on the Coffee Break Podcast.